kill the other four trees.
I call to order the City Council Committee of the Whole for July 28th, 2026. Clerk Campbell, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, Mayor. Councilmember O'Rear.
Here.
Councilmember Root.
Here.
Councilmember Williams.
Here.
Councilmember Roche.
Here.
Councilmember Pinkerton.
Here.
Councilmember Tuso.
Here.
Mayor Shoemaker.
Here. Please rise as you are able and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Each member of council has received a copy of the minutes for our Committee of the Whole meeting from July 23rd, 2026. Are there any corrections, additions, or deletions? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved as submitted. We had no one eligible sign up for citizen comments, so we'll move on past item five. Item six, staff reports. 6A, financial report. Maria Tooley, our finance director, I'll call on you to come to the podium and deliver your report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Our numbers are not quite finalized for the year, but I have sent what was updated as of June 30th right now. I'm planning to close out the whole year on August 15th to give the department's time to get their last minute invoices to be paid for the last fiscal year. So once those are tied up, I'll have final numbers how we ended the year. But these are just as of June 30th right now. General fund revenues came in at 115% over budget, which was 18% from last year. Expenditures in the general fund were 101% of the budget and were 29% lower than last year's expenses. Cash on hand in the general fund was $22,175,000. The sewer revenue funds came in 181% over budget, which is 27% above what we collected last year. Sewer expenses were 99% of their budgeted expenditures and were up 41% from last year due to our sewer rehab project. Cash on hand as of June 30th for the sewer fund was $1.4 million. Special revenue fund revenues are 104% over budget from last year, and we're about the same as last fiscal year on collections. Special revenue fund expenses were 134% of their budget, but that was lower, 21% lower than last fiscal year. Cash on hand for the special revenue fund was $11,657,000. Public works revenues came in at 101% over budget, and we had a slight increase of 2% of what we collected last year. Public Works spent 88% of their budget, which was had increased 1% compared to last year. Cash on hand from June 30th, 2026 was $1.6 million for the Public Works Fund. Some areas we were over budget this fiscal year was fire, was 1.1 over for due to a one-time salary expense. Heritage Park, $141,000 over, and the revenues that were collected for sports fees kind of counteracts that increase. The amphitheater was $54,000 over due to repairs for our new management company, and the special revenue fund was over $275,000 due to a one-time arbitrage fee due to not spending our bond down in the first 3 years. We have interviewed all of our banks who have submitted RFPs, and we are hoping to make a decision within the next week. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Director Tooley. Or any questions? Councilmember O'Rear.
The general fund, it's got a couple asterisks denoting that we receive funds from the old city hall. We created a stormwater fund with that. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that's been moved into the
storm.
So that really accounts for a large amount of the difference of the revenue between the two fiscal years.
I could do a comparison for you and send
that to you. That's what it appears to be. I just wanted to note, I think that's where that went, just the stormwater fund to seed that. So,
okay.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh. Yes, sir.
Council? Thank you, Director Tooley.
Thank you.
6B, City Administrator Report, and I'll call on T. Coker, our City Administrator.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council, Public. You do have a copy of our the monthly City Administrator Report in your packet. I would like to call out just a few items. Municipal complex, this building, we actually had a meeting this morning with the architect and HVAC crew to talk about the acoustics in this room, and so we're working towards hopefully what will be a kind of a final solution to resolve some of the acoustic issues in this room. The Municipal Tax Relief Act, I appreciate the slides before the start of the meeting, but staff has prepared a web page on the city's website, simpsonville.com/streets. If council and public, if you have questions about that, we already have an FAQ section, but we certainly are happy to include additional information if it helps explain citizens' questions. We are also scheduling a public open house for next Wednesday, August the 5th. We'll schedule it as a drop-in, so 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Here in this room. We'll have tables set up, we'll have maps, we'll have lists, we'll be able to facilitate conversations with the public. And one last thing. This morning we received news from our new venue management folks out at Heritage Park that they have booked their first concert themselves for October the 7th, the Doobie Brothers with Michael McDonald, so original gang. So that's good news, and we've got a meeting with them tomorrow to talk about Freedom Fest and what went well, which was almost everything, and how we can make it bigger and better for next year. So happy to take any questions if anyone has any.
Okay. Councilmember O'Rear.
Couple things. A lot kind of ties into the slideshow a little bit. The impact fee study, a lot of buzz online about the 1%. It's some good, some bad, but a lot of the comments are about, well, you know, why do we need to do this? We need to have an impact fee, or we need to charge whatever. I just wanted to, you know, kind of get I think the timeline's going to be several months out, but I just definitely wanted the public to know that, yeah, we are working on an impact fee.
Correct.
It's just not something you can do tomorrow. So I just wanted to kind of get that out there just for informational purposes, the 1% tax isn't the only thing we're working on. Also, the amphitheater, I know Administrator Coker and I talked about this past week, and I was very happy. I'm not a huge Doobie Brothers fan, but I know they're a very popular band, and so I was very happy to see that today. And I know this would be an impossible number, but to quantify the losses to the city for having to switch promoters, because I know, and I'm not, this is not a criticism of our new promoter at all, you know, I get it. But it has been a loss to the city financially because we had to switch up. I didn't know if there was anything that could be possibly looked at to see what that impact has been to the city moving forward until we can get to a full schedule next year.
Sure. I can look into right. that and get back to you.
All right, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Councilmember Roche.
I've been asked when the Citizens Academy will begin. Do we have any dates on that?
We don't have a date right now, but we have, from what I understand, staff has a meeting scheduled with our friends in Fountain, and so we're hoping that, you know, they'll be able to provide us with some advice. I think that their program is very similar to what I think we have in mind, and so so that's it's in the works, but we don't have a date right now.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Council. Mr. Coker, just confirm the open house for the Municipal Tax Relief Act is Wednesday, August 5th, from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
That's correct.
Great. Thank you. Councilman Roche?
August the 5th.
August the 5th.
Okay. Sorry. It says August.
So the next and final reading will be at our business meeting on August 11th.
Correct.
That's correct. Okay, great. Anything further from council for Mr. Coker? Thank you, Mr. Coker.
Thank you.
6C, planning report from John Derby, our planning director. Mr. Derby.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. You have my staff report for this quarterly report for planning. Numbers are down a little lower than the last couple of months, especially with the single-family dwelling. That's the lowest we've had in the last year. Total permits are 50. Planning Commission only met one time since the last quarterly report. That was for a major change that has already come before y'all. That's coming next week for the second and final reading. Only other thing out of planning department is the LDR update. We are looking to coordinate a workshop with council. Due to the amount of material we're going over and updating, it will be a little lengthy process. So we're probably going to start that off with a workshop to kind of go over that with council. So that, look forward to that coming out next month as a kind of a calendar invite polling to see what day works best for everybody. So I can answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, council. Thank you, Mr. Derby. I think you're still up. 6D, the City of Simpsonville Parking Study Report. And you have the presentation, and you should have the remote there. So let me switch over to your presentation.
Thank you, sir. Council, this is the parking study that staff coordinated with Walker Consultants. If y'all remember from the rezoning of the old City Hall, parking was a pretty contentious topic. So staff went out and sought an outside firm to kind of, that specializes in logistics, parking, and parking structures to kind of give us a kind of a inventory of what we have in the city, see if this is enough during the current land use and the current businesses in our downtown. If this was not enough, what should we do? And kind of looking towards the future, what should we prepare for as far as parking structures? We first kind of looked at a parking study area. This kind of covers the city center all the way to this campus down to Trade Street and College. We did notate the future Burdett North project as part of that. You see a couple of vacant spots on there. This was provided to Walker Consultants to kind of give them an understanding of what our city is laid out, what's active, what's vacant, to kind of start their process. So they came back with a study area. They did this over a two-day period in our town. This was back in March. And they came back with a study that showed us the current parking that we have. That's on street, private, and the leased parking that we have within that study area. And as you can see, on-street parking is 178, public parking is 525, and private parking 931, giving us a total of 1,634 for the whole core of our downtown. And these kind of, I don't want to go into the weeds too much, but kind of what we thought, given our habits and our revenue and the activity in our downtown, the majority of our business and activity, pedestrian traffic, is on the west side of the railroad. And you'll see in red, those areas indicate the occupancy level of parking. Those are the highest and most used areas of our town. Orange is a little less, yellow is lower, and green is pretty much not used their full potential. So they came here on March 20th, which is Friday and Saturday, and notated the areas in downtown, what was the most populated, where were our problem areas, where were our underutilized areas when it comes to parking. So not going to go too far into the weeds. That stuff was provided in your packet. Just kind of give you an illustration. We thought that the west side of the tracks was the most populated area. The east side, the little red area on the right, is Burdett Central. That is sort of the most strongest used area on the east side of the tracks. So they used some data that's kind of a little over my head. had to get a little explanation of how they came to these numbers, but you can kind of see the color coordination they had in here to kind of represent the intensity and the underutilization of some of our parking spaces. Saturday is a little bit more. The block shop Simpsonville Square location. That kind of amped up intensity for Saturday. But again, majority of the parking and the usage and pedestrian area is on the west side of the tracks. And that's the utilization. They did mention that the on-street parking was the biggest one. What they came from the study, you read in your packet, is that to summarize our parking condition in our downtown, is that what we're at right now is what you see in a healthy town. Having a parking problem is what you need. It's good to have. It's a problem, good problem to have to solve. But what we have is adequate for the uses downtown. What they did mention was that there was a lot of people that drove through our town that stopped and waited on Main Street for someone to get out. They did cause a lot of congestion. They had a lot of people that are waiting for pickup food orders. But in watching those same people circle the block, they did end up finding a parking spot at some point because they would see them out later on. It was just wasn't right there in front of the place they wanted to patronize. So that was good to hear what we kind of figured, but it helps having a professional kind of provide that information. So they really didn't encourage any future ground up kind of parking structure as of now going off the uses. But they did say as the city grows, it will be something to consider, because I kind of brought them up to speed about the old City Hall project might expand in the future. The property just north of Teal's Automotive is a large infill project that could bring a lot of activity. So I kind of asked them to provide us, like, looking forward, what would you suggest the locations for a parking structure? So they provided five originally, two of those. One was right here, and the other one was over there off of Maple Street. These are all private locations. But this, looking in the future, never know what could happen with those sites. They could come into a development agreement with the city. We could partner with them, or they could build them themselves. So one is the old City Hall. Two is the Maple Street Verdin lease lot. Three is the Burdett Phase 2 on Curtis. And just a little size options they gave us, four to five options at each one of these, and a cost breakdown of what these cost. So I think that was not really, I don't think that was really explained how much these actually cost for development. As you can see in there, the average cost, what they said, was about $35,000 per parking spot to build a parking structure. That's kind of hard for a developer to offset that cost, which they, you know, emphasize, and we have in the past, that this is something that the city should partner with to kind of help with development. So that's the old City Hall site. This is the Maple Street site, where they went a little bit bigger just because of the size of the lot. It's not conducive for a true parking structure. Normally you want an elongated rectangular shape to make more of a use of the land. And yep, that's still Maple. And that's the Burdett site off of Head Street, which is a longer one. It's more functioning layout for that. So, and again, forgive me, I got a little bit of a cold. So after that study, we kind of came back to the conclusion, like we anticipated, that the parking was, it's a convenience issue. A lot of people, like I said, they want to park right in front of their spot. And we want to encourage the mindset of getting people out and walking through our town. Part of the streetscape project, having some wayfinding signage is going to help to really guide people to those parkings that we offer, public parking, and just get people to our town. I feel that would probably help more than anything to get people where they need to go in our town and to feel that we do have parking. It just might not be right in front of the store you're going to. So those are options they gave us for the future. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Derby. Council? Councilmember O'Rear?
I appreciate this study. It was very thorough. And I think a lot of people, you know, looking at this, I saw a lot of things that we all kind of know what's where, who parks where and when. I was very interested in the parking deck. When I read the beginning, I was like, I can't wait to get into this to see where they want to put parking decks and what they think are feasible. Couple questions about site number one. That's the old City Hall property. Have there been any, is this just pure, was that looked into for what the ID plan is there at the moment? So they know this will fit around there, not that I mean, obviously the folks that own the property would have to agree to even have the parking deck there. But does this fit into what is being proposed to be built there right now?
If I hear you correctly, the places they picked were ones that were just vacant lots that one would fit there without having to do major demolition. They were aware that this project was previously rezoned for a multifamily, but it wasn't at the intensity that was previously anticipated. We did mention to them that that is a possibility in the future if that project was to change. So they did pick that location off of that information.
And I think we talked about this once a while back. What's too tall? How many levels of a parking deck before they get above the line of the buildings now? Is it, I want to say it was 3 was like the maximum before it would kind of get above.
It depends if where you're, if you were to do a standalone one right now with no structure around it, the one on Burdett, the one to south, that one would definitely tower over Burdett Central at probably 3 stories or 3 levels. This one, the proposed mixed-use development will be 3 stories, which is 50 feet. So at least 4 feet would be right at probably the height of that. So it should be tucked behind.
I think one thing this study can't really show is when people drive around and leave. I'm one of those. I mean, my wife likes ice cream stations, so I'll drive, and if I can't find anywhere close because I can't carry an ice cream 3 blocks in this heat, so I go. And I know we have ample parking according to the numbers. It's just, like you said, convenience parking. I would think, and I'm not saying to council or anyone else, we need to start working on this tomorrow. But what I think a parking deck could do in the future is free up some of these parking lots for further uses down the road instead of using them as a surface lot. A big example I use about convenience is this. I love college football. I've been to many college football games in many places in this country. And generally I rent a car, and it drives me crazy to not know where to park because I want to get there and go to the game. So when you centralize things like downtown Greenville, I just click on the parking deck and drive straight to that. I know I've got a parking place almost certainly. If not, I got a plan B parking deck. So it would be nice to centralize things somewhat. I think the one at Trade and Curtis probably isn't overly viable, or Maple and Curtis, I'm sorry, isn't overly viable. But we do have a lot of viable options here for the future, I think. So I do appreciate the study. I think it was well done. I appreciate y'all doing it.
Yeah, I mentioned in my staff report, we are trying to tinker with a parking map through GIS. It's kind of a slow process to kind of get that out there on the website and make it more of a usable online app kind of feature. So if you're in the city, you know exactly where to go. This is parking. So we're enthusiastic about the future when it comes to our parking downtown and our wayfinding. So,
Councilmember Pinkerton.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate the study. Couple of questions. One, if it hadn't already been answered, but what's the next step from staff administration to do for council? I mean, this is a great study, and it obviously involves an investment from the city, maybe partners, but where do we go from here? The expectations to have a workshop with council and discuss things, or is this 6 months, a year down the road? What are our thoughts now from administration?
I think we have some development that's coming online, our discussions with staff. We're definitely, you know, aware that moving forward, we're going to have to consider that. So that's something that if they can't park just north of that, they can't park their use on those lots, the city's going to have to come to that point that we're going to have to provide that parking at a much higher level. And that was the original intent of our downtown, was the city to provide that. So I guess it's just waiting for development to come and kind of react to that as far as, is it possible for us to partner with them or not? I mean.
Okay. Well, looking at these, if you can go to the third layout, Hedge Street, which to me would be the ideal place, and maybe they didn't come up with this, but in the future, and I've worked on a number of buildings that had this built into their structure, and you could do something like this with 2 levels with the ability to build on top of it with 2 more levels in the future. That can be done structurally. I don't know if they looked at that sort of thing or not, but that might be something that we look at in the future. It's a consolidated spot. It can go up.
Right. They did provide the option of doing two smaller ones on either side, a tabletop one, but they did kind of say that the cost of doing that and the return on the investment would not be sufficient. So we thought the idea of not just having all parking on one side, putting one structure on one, is it could we do two? And said, yes, that would work. A smaller one here and a smaller one at the Verdon, but when you start looking at the feasibility from a cost standpoint, it doesn't pay off having two smaller ones.
Well, what I'm suggesting is you could build that picture you have right there with two levels with the structural ability to go higher at a future date. Something to consider.
Correct. Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. That's good. I know this is going to come up one day for the city that we're going to need additional parking. So I'd appreciate staff keep looking into this and maybe present something to council that we can buy into in the future.
Council? I'm going to go to one of your other slides here. I can find the right one. Yeah, that's the one. You made a comment before we went to questions and answers about this is a good problem to have. And I think the red there tells that story very well. Yesterday I was driving home from Indiana, visiting family, went to see my 105-year-old aunt in Illinois. We were looking for a place to eat that wasn't the typical fast food. We were sick of that. Stopped in Canton, North Carolina. That place is pitiful. They've had tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. Major flooding about 4 or 5 years ago. 6 people killed. The huge employer in town, the Evergreen Mills, 1,500 employees, closed. Actually, they were damaged by the flooding, that the whole place went bankrupt and closed. A whole bunch of people lost their jobs. Hurricane Helene, more deaths. And their downtown is pitiful. We ate at a little cafe there, and I was showing my friends at the lunchbox here, the lunchbox in Canton, how much different it looks. And if you want to park in front of the lunchbox in Canton, you can, right in front of it. It was decent, but there were 3-4 people in there. I was in the lunchbox today and it was jammed, absolutely jammed. We are so fortunate to have this issue. And I'm not saying we don't need to address it. I'm really thankful that staff is looking into this and totally support, you know, moving forward with whatever we need to do into the future to make sure we provide adequate parking for our businesses. The other thing I want to point out, that this is an amazing story about our town. Look in our downtown, not one chain institution of any type. The closest you could come maybe is Soli Steamers, but that's a local company. They're out of Greenville. They're a local family. Different family members own different ones of those. That's a local company. The ice cream station was mentioned. The number of people who are employed and the number of business owners locally who are being supported by our community, this is a tremendous success story. And I know I took a couple minutes here. I just wanted to be a cheerleader for our city. So thank you very much to the planning department. Stick with it. Any further comments from council? Thank you, Mr. Derby. Each of our departments have either their department head here or their designee available to answer questions from council. We got your monthly reports, and thank you very much. Are there any questions from council for department heads? Councilmember Roche.
I'd like to speak with Chief Hanshaw. Is he here?
Might be better. Can y'all hear me, Mayor and Council?
Thank you.
You can probably telepathically know already what I'm going to ask.
Very popular topic.
I know that Council Member Williams has been in touch with you. We relayed the information on flock cameras during the town hall that we had. I would like the general public to know what we already know about where they are in Simpsonville and what they're actually being used for. Could you expound?
Yes, we've got a few, mostly on most of our main thoroughfares coming into the city for the purpose of exactly the things that are mentioned. You know, if we have a missing child, an abduction, a missing elderly person in a car, or a wanted suspect, it's used just to relay or track that information, vehicles or tags that fit those descriptions. Everything is done by the book. We have policies in place for all this stuff to make sure we're managing it. And I know the hot topic has been whether or not there's been some misuse by some places and some agencies. We do our own internal self-audits on the system. We have done one recently, too, just with current affairs going on. So everything is up to date. None of our folks are misusing the equipment or the software. Everything, they're doing the training, everything that they should be doing with the equipment as we intended it for.
Okay, so my understanding is that it's not just a general surveillance program where they're watching every single car and clicking on that tag. It's being used specifically to look for specific tags, people that have warrants.
Correct.
You said missing children, that sort of thing. Is that correct?
That is correct. If you'll read, there is some links and some stuff, and I know Flocks put some stuff out there. The retention period on their stuff is 30 days. Everything is deleted. The only time we access it is if we need it to search for one of those law enforcement purposes. It is not monitored real time. Again, it is not stored. We don't keep any internal in-housing stuff. It's simply searched through their database, through the cloud-based stuff where the software relies, and then every 30 days that stuff is completely wiped clean and erased. So unless we are looking for a particular person or individual, that's the only time we access it.
So if there were an accident and a flock camera were nearby, let's say my car was hit, could I ask the police department to check that, and could that be useful?
We don't release that information because you're getting into the DMV side of things too, and there's some regulations on that. Flock cameras merely will identify the vehicle or the tag. From there, for us to identify the specifics of a person, that would have to be a further, you know, investigative tool used through DMV records and those things, registration stuff that we use on a daily basis from the cars and the equipment that they already have in the police cars and stuff. So,
thank you.
Okay.
Council? Chief, would you just talk briefly about how flock cameras cannot be used for writing tickets?
Yes, I know sometimes there's been some talk about it being compared to the stuff that you see in other states where they use these cameras and radar systems to issue citations, moving citations for speeding and stuff. That is not how flock cameras are set up. They are simply reading the license plate or the vehicle stuff. It's not, the state of South Carolina is prohibited by law. We cannot issue tickets or use equipment for that, by that nature, and the flock equipment is not intended for that use.
And just as a comment along those lines for the public, under South Carolina law, we as a city, we can't, for example, set up red light cameras to catch somebody running a red light. This is prohibited by law.
That is correct. They're not used in any regards for traffic enforcement of any kind.
Right. Okay. Councilmember Pinkerton?
I'm good. Thank you.
No? Okay. Councilmember Williams?
Question that I have is it possible to get some of the detailed information on what the flock cameras are used for, how they're used, exactly what they're tracking, and put something together to put it online so when people have questions, they can get that information from the police department? Because I know there's a lot of people upset about it, social media everywhere. And if they had the ability to go look it up themselves, it might ease of mind.
Right. There's a lot of misinformation going on out there right now, but Flock does have some portals and sites set up where the public can go on there. You can even go on and check your own stuff to see if it's been ran or checked in or searched in the database. So there are some things that they've got set up. There's some stuff on their website too that allows you to have access to the information, a little bit better understanding about how the equipment works and stuff like that. So we'll be sure. I believe we may have already started to link it. I can't remember if we set it up yet, but we'll get that portal link to our website just to make it convenient for the public to access it, but it's there, it exists.
I feel like it'd be comforting to you know, have that transparency out there if they want.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Council? Thank you, Chief.
All right. Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Any further questions for the departments? All right. The staff that is not needed for business agenda items that are coming up on our agenda are dismissed. You're welcome to go home and spend the rest of the evening with your family if you would like. And thank you for being here. You're very much appreciated. Item 7, business. Proposed agenda items for the next council business meeting on August the 11th. The items that are on our agenda tonight are being discussed by council to be added to the business meeting agenda. 7A, Ordinance O-2026-09, a proposed ordinance to issue a fiber franchise agreement to the applicant South Carolina Telecommunications Group Holdings. Mr. Derby, would you summarize, please?
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. This is an ordinance, this is an item to discuss a future proposed telecommunication company to come into the city. If y'all remember from our last business meeting, we approved Ordinance O-2026-07 that required any new company coming in to be approved by Council. So that is what is being introduced tonight for discussion. As Mayor mentioned, this is the SEGRA, and there should be a representative here tonight to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Derby. A motion is in order. Councilmember Williams.
Mayor and Council, I move to approve Ordinance 0-2026-09, a proposed ordinance to issue a fiber franchise agreement to applicant South Carolina Telecommunications Group Holdings.
I have a motion from Councilmember Williams with a second from Councilmember Root. Discussion? Councilmember Pinkerton.
Okay, yeah, and this may require the representative. SEGRA, if you, while I looked up, it looks like already has established at least some network of cable and towers throughout the city of Simpsonville. Is that correct? So where and what do we want a franchise agreement for if you've already got, and I'm assuming it's, is it just trunk or is it distribution as well? I mean, you're welcome to come up to the podium. I'm sure other people have questions as well.
So my name is John Thibodeau. I'm Vice President of Strategic Operations for SEGRA. We're headquartered in Charlotte, North Carolina. We used to be headquartered down in Columbia, but we have about 40 miles of network here already. We are a commercial entity that services businesses, right? We don't serve residential customers.
Okay.
What we have in this in Simpsonville is we have what we consider a lateral. It's one long piece of fiber that comes in and distributes to your enterprise customers. SEGRA is building a large network. We have 45,000 miles of network in 24 states. We're trying to link Greenville, Simpsonville, Spartanburg into a what's called a ring system, more or less, and it's a protected network. So that way, if there's a damage, like we've had multiple damages over Helene and other things like that, so as we build network, businesses don't lose their internet capabilities. It allows us to give them a protected network. That's really what we're doing.
Okay, so again, I looked at the map on your website. You do have lines here. Are they overhead or underground or both?
So in the Carolinas, we're 70% underground. We try to stay 100%. This network that we're building is 100% underground. We stay off the utility. We're a utility provider, just like a lot of the other utility providers. But you know, we've been in Simpsonville under Palmetto Net or Spirit, you know, for probably the past 15 years or so. We rebranded to SEGRA in 2008, so that you might see some of our handholds and saw our fiber, our network. It's just branded Palmetto Net. It's the same company.
And I heard you don't intend to service neighborhoods, but it'd be more business-oriented. So your intent, I'm maybe putting the words in your mouth, but to be able to franchise within the city itself, downtown or beyond?
Like our sales reps, they're constantly, you know, looking for businesses that want a direct internet access, cloud or data services, or cybersecurity and, you know, business Wi-Fi. If that customer wants to come to our network, then we'll build to that. That's what we're after the franchise agreement for, to service additional customers, you know, in Simpsonville.
I understand we already have service in this facility from Segra. Is that correct?
You probably do. I don't have a list of all the customers.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not allowed to, you know, really tell.
Okay.
We have a lot of the county and government in South Carolina. We might even have the police department. I'm not sure.
Just maybe this is not exactly what you're looking for, but I also noticed you guys have data centers as well.
Yes, sir. So our data centers are really for like the business, right? We're not like an AI data center.
Okay.
So we house that, or it's a database, right? So all your information is protected and you have access to it via a cloud information. So we're not like the AI data centers. You know, our data centers, we have two in Charlotte, we have one in Kannapolis, we have one in Winston-Salem, and there's one in Gardner, North Carolina. They're all in North Carolina. They're not really in South Carolina. That's where our data centers are located.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yes.
Don't go far.
Oh.
Councilmember Roche.
So if I'm reading correct, you're just asking for permission for this project on Maple Street, or are you asking for citywide?
The franchise agreement. So what we're, you know, so as businesses come to us for connectivity, we will apply for permits through the right-of-way encroachment process and then build to those customers.
Only business, not residential.
Yes, ma'am. I know that's unfortunate for a lot of the residents, but you know we stay in the commercial space. That's where we're more profitable. The broadband, there's enough broadband people out there, and I don't really care to tear up people's yards and do drops everywhere, you know. So we're after the businesses.
Council. All right. Now, you might prefer that a member of staff answer this question, because I don't want you to give away, you know, any of your, you know, competitive secrets or anything. But are your competitors serving businesses here in Simpsonville? Frontier, AT&T?
I believe so. You probably have AT&T through here. Some old, there's multiple vendors. There's multiple providers. We're one of probably 11 different providers that do the same thing. But you like Spectrum, and you have some of those other providers. They do residential and business on a different type of network. Our network is solely based to serve enterprise customers, you know, commercial. So we don't mix speed, you know, business class speed. So if you're asking me for a gig or 100 gig of service, I can provide that. I don't do a one, you know, gig service at a residential customer. But exactly to your point, I'm one of many customer, you know, vendors that provide service. I don't know who they all are in the area, but more likely you have Charter or Spectrum or someone like that doing that today here.
Okay. Would your services, would your undergrounding be, it sounds to me like it's the plan would be that it would be in the commercial areas along commercial roads.
Oh, yeah.
So Fairview, downtown,
right through
Georgia.
We would go down like through downtown. You'd be a handhole in the sidewalk. It's all directional bore. It's underground. Any business along any street that wants, we'd figure out the best feasible path to get there, and then present a permit, you know, a set of drawings to the city. City planning would review it and say, yes, this looks good, or no, it doesn't look good, and we'd want us to reroute. It's a process we do everywhere. But yes, it's 100% underground, but that's the plan. I don't know if this is Duke Energy that services you guys here. Yeah, so we stay. Duke has their own. You could be on DukeNet here, which is, you know, they have their own infrastructure as well.
I think they run the main backbone on the East Coast, if I remember right. But wait one while I ask the city attorney a question. Can we limit in our franchise agreement geographic area? So, and specifically why I'm asking the question is I believe that what they're intending to do will keep them out of residential neighborhoods by their intentions. But if we craft a generalized franchise agreement and future leadership says, you know what, we might want to do residential after all, this is my concern. So,
yes. So I think, well, obviously what they've told council this evening is they want to limit it to commercial areas for businesses. So by agreement, we can limit it to those geographical areas in the city that would pertain to downtown commercial businesses. I think what I hear the representative saying is that they would prepare a map, we would agree upon it through our franchise agreement, and that would be binding upon SEGRA as mm-hmm. to where they could deploy fiber services.
Right. That, and that's acceptable to right. SEGRA?
It's where the city or the DOT has a permittal right-of-way, right? That's where we would land the infrastructure. If it's in a residential neighborhood, we do go through residential neighborhoods. If you prefer we don't, then that's up to the city to say we can't go there and we'd have to reroute.
So let me explain why I asked the question. We currently have 5 approved vendors in the city. And we've been advised by the city attorney that it's difficult to limit a utility's ability to come in and install a utility unless you have a good reason. For example, the utility right-of-way is full. My contention is that with 5 vendors, we don't have the city staff to manage those 5. We don't have the ability to look on paper or go out and look on the ground to make sure whether or not a utility corridor is full or not. To me, 5 makes it full. So I'm not very much inclined to approve another franchise agreement. You made me stumble a little bit over that when you say, yeah, we're not planning on going in the neighborhoods. That's where we have the problem. The reason I say we are full with the 5 we have is because they're cutting each other's lines almost every day. So, it, you know, sounds full to me. But at the same time, I don't perceive that your plan is going to be a burden on our residential neighborhoods. And I also don't want to just have a knee-jerk reaction and limit competition, which is generally a good thing for the customers. So that's why I was asking the question.
Yeah, right away is difficult, right? So it's tough to explain. Sometimes you have 3-foot wide, sometimes you have 15 foot from the edge of the pavement of right away. But then you can control it by depth, right? Whenever we go underground, you know, we will go 15, 20 feet under everybody else or under city utilities, public works, those sorts of things. So that's all locatable. Most of the public works maps are in GIS systems. That's how we access all that information. We go out and locate and figure it all out and make sure all the, you're going to have cuts. That's the nature of construction. I hate to say it that way, but
I understand. You know. So let me ask you a little bit more of a minor question. Are you an engineer or a sales guy or both?
Oh, I'm a construction guy. I'm the nuts and bolts of the
company. Maybe the construction guy. Maybe
yeah,
you don't know the technical answer to this.
Yes,
but I'm just curious. I was looking at your plans, and the junction boxes that are in your plans are 3 foot by over 4 foot. And
3 foot deep.
They're big. This is a question I've had with the other vendors who are in town, too. For something that's not any bigger around than my pen, and some vendors are coming in with the boxes at properties that are this big, and the one that's on my property that I'm signed up with Frontier is this big.
Right.
Why the giant boxes?
So in a residential distribution network, you're on a smaller count fiber, 12, 24 fiber, like hairs, right, that goes into that smaller box.
Yeah.
Sorry. And it could be a box like this. And how you splice and tap into those fibers is a much smaller container, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a commercial provider. The fiber I put in the ground is an 864 count fiber. And the pathway I put in there has the capability of putting 3,000 of those strands in. So it's the fiber still small, but the case it goes in, so that box that's in the ground, right? There's a splice container that goes inside it. Inside of that container, it's a it's a 2 foot by, you know, I don't know, 18 inch, you know, box that all the cables come into, and all the hair, all the strands, they land in trays. And that's how we get the network out to the customer, out to the, you know, so each individual strand or two strands goes, I dedicate that to a customer. It goes in and out of their building, lands back on another set of, you know, network. And it's a massive network that we supply versus a residential customer. Like you can, off of 12 fibers from a Frontier, you could supply an entire neighborhood because the boxes are small. And you ever notice whenever you're sitting around in the evening and you're on your internet and your speed goes down? That's because of that network. You know, you're not dedicated on fiber strands like how we do a commercial entity. Like just say the city wants on our fiber, you know, and you want a 10 gig service. Well, we give you 10 gig. It's 10 gig up, 10 gig down all the time. It doesn't matter how many people you put on it. You know, that's the difference. You know, it's just a different, different network.
Thank you. Councilmember Roche.
Along the same lines that the mayor just brought up, we are trying to beautify our downtown. And so anything that's going to be above ground, how large is it going to be? I see different things in here, but I'm not an engineer, so I don't know what those are and what colors are they going to be.
Everything's underground. So what you see is what we call a handhole or a pull box, right? So that I believe it's
Mayor Shoemaker.
Sorry, I'm not good with names, and I can barely read without my glasses. But it's an underground box. So all the conduits come into this box, and you'll see the lid. You know, so the lid is an enclosed. You know, you're absolutely correct. It's 30 inches wide by 48 inches long, and it's 3 foot down. Right, the network could be 10 feet below grade, below the ground, and then comes up into that box where we can access it. And then it goes back down underground. So that's the only thing you really see. Okay. We do have what we call matchsticks. You'll see those big white and orange posts. If you don't like to see those, we do what's called a hideaway, which is ground level, which orange. And what that allows us to do is come around and clamp onto that network and locate it. So no one hits it. So when you call 811, like people are supposed to do before they stick a shovel in the ground, we spend massive amounts of dollars to locate that network so it doesn't get hit. So whenever someone calls a dig ticket in, we get a ticket, and within 3 days we come out, we hook onto that network via those orange posts or those markers, and that lets us locate and put paint on the ground so that way you can visually see where our network is. It doesn't tell you the depth of it. But the guy that's out there with a shovel, they should know by the ticket they called in the depth of the network. So if you have five providers, you might have somebody at 18 inches, you might have somebody at 24 inches, you might have somebody, you know, that's how you control the right of way. You make people go vertical, not horizontal. You know, if you have everybody at 3 feet horizontal, then you have more chances of people getting hit. You know, it's just the way that you design a network.
Thank you. I imagine planning would have something about beautification in mind. I don't know if we have anything in our codes that restricts size of boxes, colors of boxes, because we already have electrical boxes and railroad control boxes and stuff that we can't really beautify.
No, we can coordinate with location where they go, so they're not in a side triangle or a tripping hazard, but as far as that, they're kind of exempt.
Okay, thank you, Bob.
Yeah, the lids are kind of gray. You know, it's like matches like a sock.
I have one in my yard, so
yeah.
I know.
You know what I'm looking. Yeah. They're not the green ones, but we can change the lids out. What happens with like the Frontier box? It's not rated to drive over. You know, you can drive over with a lawnmower, but you can't drive over with a truck. So the ones I put in the ground are concrete polymer, so that you can run right over them.
Councilmember O'Rear.
I don't really have any questions. Just want to say that there's a lot of information here, and the fact that it is strictly business-oriented, and the fact that we can make sure of that contractually, there's a lot of information, a lot of questions to be asked. We could probably sit here a while and do that. So what I would favor is moving it along to the business meeting so I can get – I would like to do that so I could get more information and before
– Yeah.
Yeah, because I'd love to hear more because I think there's a lot here. And there's a lot, and I don't want it to end here out of fairness, because I think there's a lot of good here, and if there's any concerns, I think over the next couple of weeks we can figure those out too, and then address them then.
Absolutely, and you know, I'm available for questions if you guys have anything in the meantime. I can meet with you guys individually or as a group, with my team, my construction group and engineering, and anything you need.
Okay. Anything further from council? All right, I'll call for the vote. On the motion to approve ordinance O-2026-09, a proposed ordinance to issue a fiber franchise agreement to the applicant South Carolina Telecommunications Group Holdings, all those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. All opposed signify by saying no. That motion carries by a vote of 7-0. Item 7B, ordinance O-2026-10. A proposed ordinance to establish requirements for the naming of city-owned and city-controlled properties and infrastructure. And I'll call on Councilmember O'Rear to summarize, please.
This is just something that's done nationwide. Most everybody has policies about how they name their properties, the federal government, state governments, local governments, and I just felt like we needed to do the same thing, to have something in writing, something in ordinance to guide how this is done in the future. And basically, that's about it. It's an ordinance to give those guidelines.
Motion is in order. Councilmember O'Rear?
Mayor and Council, I would like to move that we pass to business meeting ordinance 02026-10, a proposed ordinance to establish requirements for the naming of city-owned and city-controlled properties and infrastructure.
Second.
A motion from Councilmember O'Rear with a second from Councilmember Roop. Discussion? Councilmember Roche.
The shortened item for the agenda doesn't match the summary of the item on the memo, where it says summary of item and purpose. So will the summary of item/purpose be a part of this motion if it's passed?
What was your question for?
What are Mr. Rear's intentions? Let me put it that way first.
Like I spoke in my summary, the intentions are just putting in writing the guidelines of how we name our properties, our buildings, streets, whatever the city owns. The summary and the purpose, the exception in that summary or purpose is in the ordinance. And if you don't mind me speaking now, I didn't want to take the floor from Councilmember Roche. But,
yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The exception I put in place was to make sure if someone wanted to offer the city property, whether it be, and I think Clerk Campbell and I have talked about this, there's a lot of things that could happen. Someone give us land for a park. You don't want this to stop that. But what it does, and this is common language, this isn't Chad created language, this is common language, one year period after someone has been deceased is part of it. The exception to that is if someone does gift the city something, they actually have to put in writing, the only reason I'm going to give this to you is if you name it after me or my person. I want to put that in there because I didn't want someone that wanted to be generous with the city to not be able to just because the person that wants it named after them is still alive. So really the whole thing is just to have something in our ordinances to guide council as to how we name our properties and how we go about doing that and what the exception to that might be.
Thank you. Back to Councilmember Roche.
So currently it's already controlled because all of City Council would have to vote on naming any property, facility, building, park, street, or space owned or controlled by the city. So we actually already have a control in place. I think that this is too restrictive. I don't think there needs to be a guide for council. Council can decide for itself what it wants to name city property. It goes on to say a waiting period of 1 year shall pass before any public property is named after a deceased person. I'm not understanding that. I mean, we have Dennis Waldrop Way running through Heritage Park. He's still with us. Mr. Hendricks had things named after him that still exist, but they were named while he was alive. I would much rather honor somebody when they're still on this side of the dirt with a name, property, than to wait till after they're deceased. I don't see a reason to really honor a deceased person when they're not going to know about it. Exceptions, persons who have contributed land, money, or other significant resources. So in other words, they would be buying their way into being named, which doesn't really seem all that generous. I think I would probably push against somebody that said, I'm going to give you this land, but you're going to name it after me, or I'm going to give you a chunk of money, but you're going to name this property after me. That doesn't seem charitable at all. I just think that this goes above and beyond what's necessary. Council is very capable of deciding for itself what we want to name and where we want to put a name.
Councilmember Williams.
My question was already answered.
Okay. Councilmember Pinkerton.
Yeah, I've just got one comment on the resolution itself. I've actually had some back and forth on some language that's in there. It's pretty simple, actually, and it would just require an amendment to the ordinance itself. The way it's written now, it says it's Chapter 2 of City Council Code Ordinance hereby amended by adding a new section by the codifier as followed, Section 2, John Young. But I looked at it, and in the ordinance itself, and it's missing a word, Article 1. And so I'm proposing that that would read adoption, Chapter 2, Article 1, Section 2 of the Simpsonville Code of Ordinance, and hereby amended by adding a new section to the numbered by the codifier as follows, and it's Section 2.3. So maybe hopefully you understand that, but it's really inserting the word or words Article 1 within, so it's actually in a specific place. So I'd like to propose amending the ordinance to adopt the language, Chapter 2, Article 1, Section 2.
Before we do that as a subsidiary motion, are there any objections from council for this change to the wording? Then can we see, is it okay to have that reflected, let you share that with the city attorney and have that reflected in what comes back to the business meeting if it does? Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? All right, then we'll call for the vote. On the motion to approve a proposed ordinance 2026-10 to establish requirements for the naming of city-owned and city-controlled properties and infrastructure, all those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
All those opposed signify by saying no.
No.
No. So that motion carries by a vote of 4-3. With Councilmember Roche, Councilmember Williams, and Mayor Shoemaker dissenting. Item 7C, Resolution R-2026-15, the proposed resolution to approve the Greenville County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation and Resiliency Plan. Mr. Coker, would you summarize, please?
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. So I'm sure we all remember Helene from almost 2 years ago. At that time, I worked with Greenville County, and so I spent 2 weeks working out of the county's Emergency Operations Center. And at that time, we had representatives from federal, state, and other local jurisdictions. And so as a part of the overall response to that natural disaster, the multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan that was adopted back in 2021 essentially had been enacted. And so I was able to see firsthand how the partnerships that exist from a federal level down to a county and a city level are able to respond effectively. And so what you have before you for your consideration is a requirement of jurisdictions that are that fall within the county's current, I guess, 2026 plan, multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation and resiliency plan. And so basically if the city is interested in being eligible and receiving federal or state funding, this is something that we need to support and resolve to adopt along with the other cities as well as Greenville County.
Thank you. Motion is in order. Councilmember Roche.
Mayor, move that Council approve Resolution R-2026-15, a proposed resolution to approve the Greenville County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation and Resiliency Plan.
Second.
A motion from Councilmember Roche with a second from Councilmember Root. Discussion? Councilmember Pinkerton.
Yeah, I trust all of council read the 730-page report that came with us, this, like I did. There's a lot of information there, a lot to digest. Some of it's redundant, doesn't even really need to be in the report. But I'll tell you the truth, it lost me on page 7 when it said that they incorporated climate change into the study and inclusion. We can argue about that all you want, but this also included people on the committee that were our lawyers and are basically a political function. I'm not sure why they were involved in it, but I understand that this is something we'll probably pass. I don't understand that the citizens of Simpsonville probably have no idea what we're doing on this one, but I will say when we start including political type comments into this, that it does, it kind of takes away from the real issue. It's not, to me, this is my opinion, it's not how much rain is coming down, it's how much development we put on the ground that doesn't account for that. So that's just my opinion. Although I do appreciate your involvement in it, Mr. Coker.
Yes, sir.
Council? If there's no further discussion, I'll call for the vote. On the motion to approve Resolution R-2026-15, the Greenville County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation and Resiliency Plan, all those in favor signify by saying yes.
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 All opposed signify by saying no. That motion carries by a vote of 7-0. Before I move on to the next item, Council has been advised by our city attorney that we should enter into executive session to receive legal advice. So, members of Council, I move to enter into executive session for the receipt of legal advice regarding item 7D, Resolution R-2026-16, as allowed by South Carolina Code 30-4-70, paragraph A, subparagraph 2. Have a motion from the mayor with a second from Councilmember Roche to enter into executive session. Discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
All opposed signify by saying no. That motion carries by a vote of 7-0. No action will be taken in executive session except to return to public session. Council will not commit this public body to a course of action by a polling of members in executive session. City Council has voted to enter into executive session. I'm required to announce this by law. I'm sorry, I'm repeating myself, but City Council has voted to enter into executive session for the receipt of legal advice regarding item 7D, Resolution R-2026-16, as allowed by South Carolina Code 30-4-70, paragraph A, subparagraph 2. Upon coming out of executive session, Council will reconvene in public session to take up the remaining items on the agenda and may take action regarding matters discussed in executive session. Council is now in executive session. Council has returned from executive session. Item 7D, Resolution R-2026-16, a proposed resolution to restore the historic name of Simpsonville City Park. Councilmember O'Rear.
Make it short. My mic's off. Hold on. I'm going to let the motion and the resolution speak for itself.
Motion is in order. Councilmember O'Rear.
Mayor and Council, I propose to move to business meeting resolution R-2026-16, a proposed resolution to restore the historic name of Simpsonville City Park.
Second.
I would second.
I have a motion from Councilmember O'Rear with a second from Councilmember Roop. He just got in ahead of you, Councilmember Tuso. Hold on one moment, if you would, please. Clerk Campbell, would you go and get my name list from the table in there? So that everybody knows what it is I'm doing. I have a system for keeping track of whose turn it is to speak, and it involves these little wooden blocks, and I left it in the other room. So that's why I asked him to go get those for me. Helps all of us keep track of what's going on. Now, discussion. Councilmember Pinkerton.
Council, I'm going to move to make a motion to postpone this item indefinitely.
Second. A motion from Councilmember Pinkerton with a second from Councilmember Roche to postpone indefinitely. This is an item that can be discussed. Discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor of postponing indefinitely signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. All opposed signify by saying no.
No.
No. Okay. Clerk Campbell, can you do a roll call vote, please?
Yes, Mayor. Councilmember O'Rear?
No.
Councilmember Roop?
No.
Councilmember Williams?
Yes.
Councilmember Roche?
Yes.
Councilmember Pinkerton?
Yes.
Councilmember Tuso?
No.
Mayor Shoemaker?
Yes. The motion to postpone indefinitely passes by a vote of 4-3. Item 7E, speed limit in League Estates, proposal to set the speed limit in League Estates at 20 miles per hour. Councilmember Roop, would you summarize, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just with the things that we're doing with the opening of Hunter Street coming up, speed humps and other things that we're doing in that neighborhood, I thought just an extra layer of, to my help with some prevented, you know, trying to prevent people from speeding through there or actually using it to, I know lowering it 5 miles an hour doesn't seem huge, but I did talk to Councilmember Pinkerton. He did say that he's gotten pretty good feedback when we lowered the speed limit to 20 in Poinsettia. So I would like to make the motion that we lower the speed limit in League Estates to 20 miles per hour.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Roop with a second from Councilmember Roche. Discussion? Councilmember Roche.
I've received emails in support of this from people that live in League Estates, especially on South Pliny. They're also asking for a few other measures that I will bring up at a later date that may or may not need to be on an agenda, but I'm all for lowering the speed limit. I would like to add that just like when we lowered the speed limit in Poinsettia, unless it's enforced, it doesn't matter what's on the sign. So we need some enforcement in that area.
Council? On the motion to lower the speed limit in League Estates to 20 miles per hour, all those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. All opposed signify by saying no. That motion carries by a vote of 7-0. Item 7F, speed humps on Foxhound Road. The proposal is to place speed humps on Foxhound Road on the east and west portions of the road near or adjacent to the park/playground. Councilmember Roche, will you summarize, please?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I have been trying to do this this will be the ninth year. Literally ran to get speed humps on Foxhound Road, on either side of the play park and pavilion there. We've had a dog killed. We've had two children hit right there. We have a lot of cut-through traffic. Comes off of Davenport and attempts to go to the light at Hunter's Woods Drive because, of course, they're going straight to Walmart or they're going out onto Fairview Road. They don't want to stay on Davenport, take that all the way down, turn on Grandview, and use the proper intersections. So they cut through Hunter's Woods. It's been a problem for a while. Our former planner had a traffic calming, what did he call it, starts with a P, you go around, you get people to sign it. Petition. Thank you. Process in place. I got petition for three roads. I got the neighborhood to sign them. I turned them in. I opened not the claim, but he had a project that you had to open online and then choose a project manager. It was a lengthy bureaucracy. And even after all of that was completed, nothing happened, and then he left and we had new planners. So that was the second setback. I am begging. We did make the traffic study for Poinsettia and League Estates, et cetera, this last time. But I've been making noise, and I'm just putting it on the agenda now, just straight up, please. Give us a couple of speed humps, because when they come off of Davenport and they go down Hunter's Hill Road, which is a straight downward hill, they turn onto Foxhound, and it's completely flat and straight. And it is a raceway to get to the other end to get onto Fairview. And I think the play park and the safety need there is self-explanatory.
Thank you.
So with that, I motion that council approve speed humps on Foxhound Road to be placed on the east and west portions of the road near or adjacent the park or playground.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Williams. I'm sorry, from Councilmember Roche with a second from Councilmember Williams. Discussion? Councilmember O'Rear.
Quick question for Councilmember Roche. We do have a traffic calming study of some kind from the past.
I don't know where that is. It's been taken off the website.
I'll take your word for it. I just want to make sure the planner
that we had before had it on a website, and everything's changed since then, and it didn't carry over. So there's literally no process now in place. I don't know where the petitions went. I don't have anything.
I'll take your word for that. I mean, because really the only thing I want to point out is, well, one, I'm glad that after years that, I mean, speed humps do work. I mean, that's why we're talking about this now. And I'm glad you're looking out for your ward. I'm glad to hear there was a, because that was kind of my only issue was, did we even do traffic calming? Because if we don't do traffic calming at some point, we're going to have a lot of folks wanting to come get speed humps, just can you do it tomorrow type thing. So as long as that's in place, I'm good with that. That was the only issue I was going to foresee, is if there was no traffic calming at all. Thank you.
So I want to add something to that from the standpoint of, I see Council Member Emeritus Hutchings is in the audience. And first of all, since the day I was elected, Council Member Roche has brought this up again and again and again. She's been doing her level best to do something about this. And I agree there has been a bureaucratic process in the way. Councilmember Hutchings brought up several streets, at least a couple of streets in Westwood that need to be addressed. And so the only reason I bring this up is to ask if Councilmember Roche would be amenable to us having the city administrator commission another study, just so that we have the documentation, but also include, I'm not the expert on the west side of 385, but I think I'm thinking of Cheyenne and Westwood. There's a couple other places that we probably should address at the same time. It might take an extra month or two to get to the speed humps on your street, but I think it would be good to have the backup of a traffic engineer. The other reason I think we should do this is I'm a lot more comfortable with council requesting the study and having a traffic engineer say, yes, this works, this is okay, you can do this, you know, this way. I think this will be pretty simple. I think it will fly through, but I think what Councilmember O'Rear is alluding to is maybe is, do we really want individual council members to get in the position of going, you know, oh, you want speed humps? Well, let me put that on the agenda. We need to have, I think, a more formal process to go with this. But I'm totally in support of what you're wanting to do because I know you've worked so hard over the years. So is that okay with you?
It would be, except, again, bureaucracy. So if we lump in what several other council members want to do, then we get stuck in that churn again, and we got to wait and pay for a study. And we've already done that. They actually already put one of those, the police put one of those.
Counters.
Yes, counters and the speed, where it tells you the speed. What is that called? It monitors your speed, and it puts it up on the digital display. Neighborhood kids absolutely love that. We've already done all of that on Foxhound Road, and this has just been lagging. And if I'm going to stick to my motion, and okay, if other council members are as concerned about their issues in their wards, then, you know, they're welcome to do the same. But at this point, I just feel like it has to be an agenda item because I've begged for so long, and I've gone through the bureaucracy and completed all the studies, and then it just got dropped when we changed planners. So I'm going to stick with it.
Council? All right, I'm just as a follow-up to what you just said, I'm going to go along with you. Okay, so I'm not going to do that. If we want to do it for other neighborhoods, we need to put it on the agenda. I agree. So on the motion to approve speed humps on Foxhound Road on the east and west portions of the road near the near or adjacent to the park slash playground, all those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes. Yes.
All opposed signify by saying no. That motion carries by a vote of 7-0. 7G, Simpsonville Teacher of the Year, proposal to establish an annual Simpsonville Teacher of the Year Award in September via public nominations of teachers employed by a school within the city limits and subsequent selection by city council. Councilmember Roche, would you summarize, please?
Yes, this was facilitated by email that I know I received. I don't know how many other council members received it. I know that Councilmember Pinkerton did receive it. He shared that with me. And they were wanting to recognize a 30-year teacher that has made a huge impact, and you would if you teach for 30 years in a positive way. And they're getting nowhere with going through other chains of award or recognition. So this student came to me and said, you know, she's had such a positive impact. I was talking with other people. Is there something that council could do? Well, I don't necessarily just want to hand out an award to one teacher because I believe this is something that we could do to recognize other teachers as well. So as the motion reads, that's what I want to do. I want to establish Teacher of the Year. That is an award that's given out once a year in a council meeting in September. I believe that the public should make the nominations, and then city council should read the nominations and choose, and then make this award an annual event. Does this need to be an ordinance is a question.
No.
Does it need to be a resolution?
Well, I think you would. Do you intend to establish some type of criteria for how you're selecting it? Then yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Then we would need to put it in a written resolution form.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we pass it the way it is, or do I need to wait? Can we do a resolution before the next meeting?
Yeah, we can. We'll move it forward as a resolution to the business meeting, and in the interim, we will create a written resolution that we can all hopefully agree upon.
Okay, thank you. Then, Mayor, I motion that Simpsonville Teacher of the Year is established, an annual Simpsonville Teacher of the Year Award in September via public nomination of teachers employed by a school inside city limits and subsequent selection by city council.
Second.
A motion from Councilmember Roche with a second from Councilmember Pinkerton. Discussion? Councilmember Roop, and then we'll go to O'Rear.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I got that letter too, or email too, and it was well written, by the way, so it must have been a good teacher. Just your visions on this, Councilmember Roche. Do you see this as, because there's going to be elementary, middle, and high school included in the city limits, are you looking at one teacher per school or just one overall? Like, and I guess we can talk about this moving forward. What were your initial thoughts on that?
Just one per year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember O'Rear?
I received the same thing, and I thought it was a really nice thing for that person to do. So I appreciate Councilmember Roche following through with it. Teachers, I mean, in full disclosure, my daughter's about to be a first-year teacher at one of the city schools, so that would probably be a vote in the future I'd have to recuse myself on if that ever came up. But I appreciate the recognition of the teachers, and I'm glad the person that emailed us got the ball rolling on this.
Council?
I have a procedural question about having in the minutes recorded that this is going to be a resolution sent to the business meeting. The way minutes are done and the way I do the agenda is whatever council says in the motion, that's what's going to go on the business meeting agenda. Mr. Hughes, could they make a motion to amend to make it a resolution, vote on that?
Sure.
And then vote on the main motion?
If Ms. Roche can.
Okay, Mayor, I motion to change the verbiage to make the Simpsonville Teacher of the Year a resolution.
Second.
All right, I have a motion from Councilmember Roche with a second from Councilmember Pinkerton. Now we're discussing whether to add the word resolution to the main motion. Any discussion? So all in favor of changing the wording, signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. All opposed, signify by saying no. That motion carries by a vote of 7-0, so the main motion is amended. So I have questions on the format of this, just real quick. We need to make sure that we have a deadline of when they need to be submitted so that we have time to consider, you know, so that needs to be part of the process. The other question I have is about eligibility in terms of being within the city limits. And specifically what comes to mind for me is Rudolph Gordon, which is just right on the edge of Simpsonville, but isn't in Simpsonville. But I consider it one of Simpsonville's elementary schools. Let's say the teacher lived in Simpsonville but taught at Rudolph Gordon. I would hate to leave them out of the eligibility. I'm not thinking we should have a teacher who lives here and teaches at Travelers Rest be eligible, but let TR recognize them. But we may want to consider expanding that. That's my only comments. So, okay. Any further discussion? Okay, on the motion to approve a resolution establishing an annual Simpsonville Teacher of the Year Award in September via public nominations of teachers employed by a school inside the city limits and subsequent selection by city council, all those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
All opposed signify by saying no. 7H, live streaming. Oh, by the way, that motion carried by a vote of 7-0. I should announce that. 7H, live streaming of city council meetings, a proposal to make all city council meetings available in real time via live stream starting January 2027. Councilmember Roche, would you summarize, please?
Thank you. This came up in our town hall. I've been asked for years. It's been discussed for years. But it came up in town hall and highly favored. So it's on the agenda. It's self-explanatory. I think we need to move into this century and join the rest of the cities in Simpson, in South Carolina that do this. I think that it's transparent, and I think that it provides for a more informed public, and that's what we're here to do.
Motion is in order.
So the motion then, Mayor, I move that council approve live streaming in city council meetings to make all city council meetings available in real time via live stream starting January 2027.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Roche with a second from Councilmember Williams. Discussion? Councilmember O'Rear?
You know, when I first saw this come up, I mean, I like the idea. I actually texted Councilmember Roche about it. I floated this a couple years ago, but it didn't seem to be, you know, overly popular at the time with the administration, so I just kind of let it go. So I'm glad it's back up. And anytime I look at something like this, you know, I try to think what wrong could happen. And really the only thing I think wrong could happen is some people just aren't public speakers. And they might struggle to get up there, but if you have a camera on them, they might not get up there at all. But I think that would be a very, very small problem, but that would be the only thing I could see really be an issue. So I'm kind of with Councilmember Roche, would get into the 21st century with this.
Councilmember Williams?
As Councilmember Roche said, that this was brought up in the town hall, and I think this could be a real positive thing with a lot of other cities do that with people who are not able. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are not able to come to council meetings for many reasons, but it'll help allow them to engage with the current things that are going on in the city, and hopefully that will bring more people that are interested and wanting to vote for our city also, since numbers for voting are quite low. But hopefully it will engage the community to be involved. More people that are not able to come to a Tuesday meeting at 6 o'clock or for any reason. And so I think this would be a good idea for everybody to be involved and get into the new age.
Okay. Councilmember Pinkerton.
Yeah, assuming this gets approved by council, that's all well and good, but this has got to go to administration to be able to facilitate this.
Yes, sir.
I don't know how much you've gotten involved in it up till this point. Is this something that can be done with approval of council in the future, or how it's going to work by January 27?
Great question. So, Councilor, I had a conversation with our current AV vendor. It's a company called Solutions with a Z at the end. They have a two camera setup that they provide to a lot of cities and towns, smaller jurisdictions, countywide, I should say, smaller counties. That essentially would have one camera on the dais. You could have sort of a wide angle, or you could narrow in on, you know, elected officials, and then have a second camera out into the audience with a second setting, kind of zooming in on a speaker at the podium. It'd include an audio visual mixer, and then also a small device that would allow the city to live stream it to multiple, you know, to Facebook, to YouTube, to whatever platforms. And so that entire package, plus minus $25,000.
Does somebody have to operate this, or is it just work?
So if you want a larger system like a five or six camera, then you have to have dedicated staff. We'd have to convert a closet into a production studio. But as far as just this simple two camera setup, it can actually be run from the mayor's seat.
Okay, that's $25,000. That's all in. Is there any other costs later on for streaming, you know, that sort of stuff?
I'm not sure about that. I know we do have a YouTube channel, but
for
Clerk can speak to it.
For YouTube, there's no cost for us to live stream. I would have a question about storage space. If we're storing it, whether we would need to purchase more space, but I can't imagine that being expensive.
Okay, I don't have a problem moving it forward, but I'd like to before the next business meeting, understand exactly what we intend on proposing to get and the cost.
If I could just mention one other item. So I mentioned earlier in the meeting that we had a conversation with the architect and HVAC folks, mechanical system folks, about what to do with the acoustics. They're taking some ideas back to the shop. It looks like we might wind up with a recommendation of a hard ceiling. Which means basically everything from the deck is going to have to come out. And so the time to install any new AV equipment would be at that time. So.
Okay, well, that'd be interesting to know how that works out. I mean, just throwing it out there, but that's a pretty good task.
It is.
It would be very interruptive. And I know we have less meetings in November and December. Might have been the ideal time to install all that, which would be, that's something you guys need to bring out and let us know before the next meeting.
Yes, sir.
Roche.
I'd like to avoid YouTube if we can, because of storage, but also because of public comment. I can see how that would go completely off the rails, and also sharing and getting into the negative side of social media. I think it would be better if we could figure out, if Ghost could figure out how to let us put a live link on the website that people can always access.
I'll email Ghost tomorrow to find out about that capability.
Like to just keep Simpsonville in Simpsonville. I mean, anybody could go to the website, but it's definitely more professional than YouTube.
The benefit of that is we would have a choice to have or not have a public comments section. We could just not have one on the website.
Thank you.
All right. I have some additional questions as well. Initial equipment cost of $25,000. Do you have any estimate of what the annual operating cost would be?
No, sir.
Okay. Mentioned that depending on how elaborative a system we get, that there's, in order to run this during the meeting, might require dedicated staff to do that. I have a question for our city attorney. Would a video recording be an official record that requires archiving?
Yes. I believe so, yes.
So include in your dollars and your thought process what it's going to take to archive video, which makes very large files, and that we have to archive them forever, at least 30 years.
I would have to review the South Carolina Archives law to give you a definitive statement on that, but it's a while.
So there is some cost in that. There's also, you're going to have to include in the annual operating costs the time that it takes to manage that, getting things into the archive place and making sure that, you know, it's being managed and taken care of and backed up and all that good stuff. I'm also curious, as I'm assuming that we're meaning business meeting, committee of the whole, not workshops, not our other bodies that meet here, planning commission, zoning board.
It just says city council meeting.
City Council would be Committee of the Whole and business meetings. Okay. Now, let's talk about a big reason why I'm opposed to this. None of us up here are perfect at this. We stumble over our words, get locked up when you're trying to think of a specific word, and I do a lot of the talking because I'm running the meeting, and so it happens to me more often than most, but I can't tell you how much I appreciate it when you lock up when you're trying to say something, because then I feel like I'm not the only one. So here's the thing. You just close your eyes. You're not asleep. You just close your eyes while you're listening. Now you're on the video asleep. You yawn. You have a momentary lapse and pick your nose. You know, something like that. It's not there anymore. I went and looked for it today. It's not there anymore, but when I was first sworn in as mayor, if you ever text message and you go to the animated, is it GIF or GIF? I never know. Whatever you want to call it. The little animated thing that you can put on your text message, and you typed in eye roll, top of the list was a Los Angeles City Councilman. That was top of the list. It's too easy to take something that happens on video and make it viral. It doesn't really work well on audio. You can't really do much with audio in terms of making something that is fun for people to watch. It also, anybody can come here and live stream us on Facebook or YouTube, or the television stations can come and put their cameras. In fact, I just now noticed we have somebody who is recording us over there. That's acceptable. And so we are at risk for that on an occasional basis, but an official recording is a lot easier for a news outlet to pick up, and they will show people doing unattractive things. If we decide as council members to engage in a very heated debate, that's the kind of thing that gets shown at municipal association meetings across the country. So I'm just, this makes me squishy. We're not required to do this. I understand the thought process of this being more open. It is. But from a standpoint of the costs that are involved, the amount of staff time that's required, and the potential for it being misused against individual council members who were just being human, I think is a reason that I am generally opposed to this. Now, I'm going to vote yes tonight to move this forward to the business agenda, but I do have those concerns. So any further comments from council? Councilmember O'Rear.
I appreciate those comments. Those were the same ones I heard 2 years ago. We're all human. I understand that. I'm not the prettiest guy to start with. So having a camera in my face, if I make a facial expression, I have cervical problems and I'm stretching my neck. I think you have to balance risk and benefits. Yes. Does it risk me, scratching my nose and I look funky and someone makes, that's fine. I don't mind. The benefit is really, there's people at home that either can't make the trip, don't want to make the trip. They can watch this. It's more of a transparency thing to me. I mean, I get what you're saying. Yeah, we can all look goofy at any point in time. My kids have plenty of goofy looking pictures of me. I understand. Cameras are everywhere. We mentioned some earlier with the chief of police. We're public figures, but we're Simpsonville. We're not federal, but everyone's a public figure out there. You're getting your picture taken all the time. And I see what you're saying, but I think for full transparency, I think it's a great idea. I'll take my lumps if someone says I look funny or I look like I'm not paying attention. I do, but people are going to, see things and say things. I'm willing to risk that for the transparency of it.
Councilmember Roche?
I just want to say I'm not blind that, to the cost. I know there will be a cost as far as cameras, as far as website hosting, as far as storage. And I do recognize your concerns. We don't always look flattering when we come in here, especially in the summer when it's humid. Or if we're in a hurry, we're the last one to the podium, or happen to be late, there's lots of reasons that you wouldn't want to be recorded. But again, we are public officials. We are elected to do this. So it becomes self-protection versus public transparency and accountability. The public told us at the town hall that they want this. And I feel like we represent the people. If they're asking for this, if this will be a way that they can engage when they can't leave the house, they got little kids, they're not going to drag them all in here for a council meeting. The elderly, name it. There's lots of reasons to stay at home and live stream this. I think it's a worthwhile project, and I think most taxpayers would be okay with the expense.
Council? So just one comment I do want to make about the public. A lot of times the public says things. It's easy to say something you think you get the one-line email. It took them 10 seconds to dash that off, but the answer is going to take hours of research and explanation of what it is. This is It's an easy thing to say. I think people think this is easy. You go and you shop at Amazon.com and you just click on things and it shows up at your house a lot of times the next day. They have literally thousands of people who do nothing but work on the user interface of making that happen. So it's easy to say this would be a nice thing to have. I do think that there are significant obligations on the city, both in cost and in staff resources, to make something like this go. So it's just a concern I have about that. Okay, any further comments from council? I'll call for the vote. On the motion to approve live streaming of city council and make all city council meetings available in real time via live stream starting in January 2027, all those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
All opposed signify by saying no. That motion carries 7-0. We have one item remaining on the agenda, and again, our city attorney has advised that he would like to give us some legal advice regarding this particular item. So, council, I move to enter into executive session for the receipt of legal advice regarding item 7.I, resolution R-2026-17, as allowed by SC code 30-4-70, paragraph A, subparagraph 2.
Second.
A motion from the mayor with a second from Councilmember Roche. Is there any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. All opposed signify by saying no. That motion carries by a vote of 7-0. No action will be taken in executive session except to return to public session. Council will not commit this body to a course of action by a polling of members in executive session. City Council, this is my legal requirement to announce, City Council has voted to enter into executive session for the receipt of legal advice regarding item 7I, resolution R-2026-17. That number is wrong on the screen. R-2026-17, as allowed by SC code 30-4-70, paragraph A, subparagraph 2. Upon coming out of executive session, we will reconvene in public session to take up the last item on the agenda and may take action regarding matters discussed in executive session. Council is in executive session. Council has returned from executive session to public session. Regarding item 7I, based on advice that we have received in executive session, and since this item belongs to me, I'm going to move to postpone indefinitely resolution R-2026-17.
Second.
Have a motion from the mayor with a second from Councilmember Roche to postpone indefinitely. Discussion? So I'll make one comment before we vote. I think there are very valid legal concerns about why this isn't a practicable method of dealing with this. But in the next few days, I'm going to draft a letter, and I will copy all of council for informational purposes. Please don't reply all. I will send out my email in a way to make that not practical anyway. But I'm going to request that Administrator Coker have his staff prepare a report that comes back to all of council and gets presented at our next committee of the whole meeting that discusses where we stand as far as how many open permits there are, where these operators are functioning in the city, what enforcement actions we've taken for things that are not in compliance with city ordinances, and then we can have that shared with council as a whole and also during the committee of the whole with the public in general. Any further discussion? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. On the motion to postpone indefinitely resolution R-2026-17, all those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. All opposed signify by saying no. That motion carries by a vote of 7-0. Item 8 is adjournment. If there are no objections, we will stand adjourned.